ahead and get the meeting started. I'll do what I typically do, where I just go through some housekeeping things, and I'll go through the attendance as well for the minutes, and then I'll hand it over to you, Ginger, if that's okay.
That sounds great.
So welcome, everyone, to the first meeting of 2021, the first statewide adult committee meeting of 2021. We've made it through 2020. So I'm so glad to see all of you here. Looks like we have about 14 participants on the call. My name is Kirby Fye. I'm listed as Amy Holland on the participants list if you've joined via WebEx. Amy Holland is also here. But this is Kirby Fye with the department. Just a few things I'd like to go over before we get started. Please mute your phone or your computer if you're not speaking. It just gives a lot of feedback. If you don't. If you have a question or a comment, I know we're going to be talking about the needs assessment. We have a lot of discussion. If you could just state your name for the purpose of our minutes before you speak, that would be helpful. And also, per Governor Lee's Executive Order 71, this meeting will be recorded and it will be posted to the department website within the next day or two. I'm going to go ahead with the attendance. I'm going to start with the individuals who have joined via WebEx because I can see their name listed, and then I'll go to the individuals who have joined by phone. So like I said, this is Kirby Fye with the department, who's also with the department, Avis Easley, who's with the department, and Kurt Hipple, who's with the department. I see Allison White on the call, Debbie Loudermilk, Evelyn Juergen, Jan Cagle. Oh, I see, Jan, I like your mask. I like that color. Kara Coleman, Lincoln Kaufman. I see Samantha. Oops, sorry. Samantha, are you from Region 1?
I'm Flagle.
That's what I thought. Hey, Sam. Let's see here. Okay, now I'll switch over to the call-in users. I know I heard Emma Long on the call earlier. Who else has joined via phone?
Patrick Starnes.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello, everyone. Ginger. Happy New Year.
And Ginger Nassery.
Vonda Wagner.
Lori Rash.
I know we have one other. Oh, go ahead.
Candace Allen. I was trying to unmute myself on my phone.
I was like, I think one of you is muted. Hi, Candace.
It's me.
Is there anyone else that joined via phone that didn't get to state their name? All right, Ginger, I'll go ahead and hand it over to you. I know that we'll be talking about the needs assessments. I do have the 2020 needs assessments available. If you need me to share that document during your discussion, I don't mind to. Just let me know.
Thank you, Kirby. And Candace, I'll need all the help I can get from you too today. If you were able to see the attachments that Kirby sent earlier with the agenda, if you'll look at that, the needs assessment, we're all the way down toward the bottom on pages 11 and 12, I believe. So that might be helpful if you have the ability to refer to that as we kind of talk about what we identified as our needs last year and kind of what direction we want to go forward in the next year. So I do want to thank everybody for taking out time. It's a kind of a crazy time and a weirdly busy, a busy time with a lot of phone calls and Zoom meetings and stuff. So thank y'all in advance for your time this morning. In looking at our needs assessment for last year, we identified two mental health needs, and one was the need to establish transitional housing or respite services to aid the homeless or potentially homeless individuals with mental health disorders being discharged from inpatient hospitalizations, the emergency departments, or jail in order to prevent readmission or recidivism and allow these individuals time to complete tasks to obtain permanent housing. So that was one of our mental health needs. The other mental health need was to enhance workforce development that will allow providers to obtain and retain psychiatric providers and licensed therapists, particularly clinicians to serve individuals insured by Medicare, in order to provide effective services and meet the needs of the community. So I will kind of open it up for discussion. I think Kirby asked if you could just say your name before you kind of added anything to help Amy with the minutes. That would be awesome. And I'll just kind of be quiet for a second.
This is Evelyn Juergen, and I'm just want to say something on the transitional housing. I think there's still a great need for that. There is a gap in the services when it comes to people getting out of the hospitals or people being released from our local jails or prison, and especially when they come sometimes with no resources at all, no funds, and it's a struggle. You can't let them go to the street, and it's just a struggle for housing for them. Even if it's just something temporary till we can get their SSI and all this stuff, you know, reinstated. I think it's still a very high need for that transitional housing.
Thank you, Evelyn. This is Ginger again. I know there was an effort to coordinate some opportunities with through the Nehru's Housing Department a little bit earlier this year, and I think COVID kind of knocked some of that back on its heels. But THDA did have that one request for grant that went out and then kind of got pulled back, and then it went back out to look at the focus group for, I think the focus was folks coming out of jail, folks with a substance use disorder, and there was another group in there. Sam, do you remember the other group? There were three groups in there that the grant was trying to focus on. But even with we haven't heard back from the grant, I don't think yet. And I don't know, and that was the only one I kind of saw to kind of build that kind of capacity. So I'm going to affirm, from my point of view, Evelyn's statement that it still is a pretty great need out there. You know, but my perspective is a little, you know, we've got some big cities in Region 1, but we're a lot more of a rural area than maybe some of the other regions. So again, I'll kind of be quiet and see if anybody else has anything to add.
Jen, this is Sam Slagle. I'll chime in sort of the same tune as Evelyn on that second goal, where we are more rural, and it seems that maybe even COVID has had an impact on our workforce, and yet to be seen how that's going to kind of come out in the wash on the back end of this. But that second goal of just not having the providers, not having the workforce to serve folks, that licensed crew, I still think that's huge. We have to come up with a means to get the carrot out there for folks to do this. It's such a hard job. We don't get paid enough, and there's just not enough of us out there to take care of folks. So, and maybe that's worse here on our corner of the state where we are so rural, and maybe on the other end, maybe it's not as prevalent, but I think it's still very much a need.
I agree. This is Candace. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering too if there's been any move, you know, like towards the Memphis area or anything, because I think COVID's just kind of knocked everything maybe back. So it's kind of hard to assess where maybe we would have been if we didn't have to shift and address, just kind of staying open and taking care of who we had in place instead of trying to add other things. So I just am wondering if there was any movement on the other side of the state as well, because we're talking from the east perspective. Hello?
Do we have anybody from the West that might can add any input from how they're seeing things with transitional housing needs or workforce development?
This is Lori Rash.
Hi, Lori.
Hey. I think that workforce development is needed, and I know that we've got supportive employment, and honestly, I'm not sure if we need more supportive employment, or if there's enough there, but I think employment is a big issue because what we see sometimes with I see with the members I work with is that their finances are not real good. And so employment and other ways that they can survive. So employment, I think, is a big one. As far as the housing, I've seen a little of that, but the employment is what I've noticed more.
Thank you. Just to clarify, I think just to make sure I'm understanding, your perspective is that we might need to focus on more employment opportunities for the people we serve versus looking at ways that we can hire and retain high quality staff. I think maybe we were kind of talking on two different ends there. So your focus is more on what kinds of things can we look at to develop more sustainable employment for folks?
Well, that could be part of it, but the other part is, are there enough resources out there that help people to connect with employment? Are there enough resources for supportive employment agencies? And I know Pathways offers that in certain counties in West. And so I don't know what their if they've got enough staff, they may need more. They may need more resources. So, but what I'm seeing is that folks really need to be connected with people that can help them to get back into the workforce or to enter the workforce if they've never been in there, because it's difficult when you've had a serious mental health issue. Mm-hmm. Whether you've had it for a long time or you just got a diagnosis, it's really difficult for people to enter that world because they're already filled with concerns that it may give them a relapse or, you know, so having more supports might be helpful. So
okay.
I don't know. Maybe the way I presented it, it could go either way.
Okay.
So,
Okay. I think I'm hearing you now, and I appreciate the clarification. Again, this is Ginger, and I appreciate the clarification. So I think I can identify with what you're saying, and let me rephrase it and make sure I'm capturing it again. It's not only looking at workforce development for clinical teams. It's also working for workforce development for supportive employment team members, and maybe even we can get a little more specific with IPS workers who have that unique skill set to help people get jobs a little more rapidly, hopefully. So just kind of helping to build capacity. So if that was even looking at, could we develop some grants to focus on that? Could we partner with Voc Rehab to excel that, those kinds of things. So did I get it a little more clear this time around?
You did. You got it very clear. And one more thing, I'm going to throw one more wrench in the system. I don't know. I know in some bigger cities, they do probably a better job than small rural areas, but people with felony records, being able to get their records, get that expunged. And as you know, that costs money. It's a process that people sometimes want to avoid because for whatever reason. So I'm just putting that out there because it came into my mind, and I'm sharing it with you all. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Emma.
Hey, Emma.
And I wanted to say something. I've been retired since 2014. Of course, I worked between the two systems, the criminal justice system and the mental health system. And of course, Avis probably remembers me bringing this up once before about, I called it a stop by house, where when the clients that I worked with, when they got out of jail, they would be out on the street until somebody could get to them. And what happens is they get rearrested for lottering or whatever, and they go back to jail. And so I thought if we could come up with a house that would maybe someone would screen them, you know, before they left the jail, and so that if there was a family member, you know, that could take them, maybe they couldn't take them till 8 o'clock that morning, but they get out at 2 o'clock in the morning because they get out the same time that they get arrested and have many hours, days that they serve. And so I was just wondering at that point, was there any money or grants, anything that, you know, people not necessarily having to open up a, what do you call it, group home or rehab facility, but just, you know, have a place that they could stop there just, you know, temporarily till they get, you know, maybe the benefits, you know, it may not take but 2 days, you know, but you have people in place, to monitor that. And I thought at that point, because that's what I kept running into the whole 14 years that I worked in that system. And so now I'm hearing the same thing pretty much, is that there's no place for them to go, which we don't have anything here. I think they're working on a shelter for men, because we had a person to actually freeze to death here, I guess, last month or something. But anyway, I just wonder if that was still something that I may not have everything that I've talked about. And I actually talked to the sheriff here probably about 3 years ago now. He thought it was a good idea, and he thought he had a grant that would cover that, but I hadn't heard anything else since then. So I just wanted to mention that again, Avis, and maybe, you know, something out of this, you know, can maybe work for the individual, because I think that's what I heard initially, that there was no place for them to go when they got out of whatever the facility was. So I just wanted to add that.
Emma, this is Avis. Thanks for bringing that up again. And you are right. You had mentioned that several years ago. Just a couple questions. Do you think the need that you're speaking of would fit into something that had been said earlier this morning about the transitional housing, but instead of it being a transitional housing for longer term, it could be in line with the transition, in line with transitional housing for maybe a 24-hour to 48-hour period as well as long term with that. Is that something that would fit in your line of thinking with what you're saying? Just trying to see if we can merge the two together if there's a need.
Exactly. That's pretty much what my thoughts are. That, you know, because I think what scares people away from doing anything, because, you know, the first thing they think about is how much money can I make out of this? But it has, you really can't look at it from that standpoint. But the transitional part of that would mean that they would have to, you know, they still would have to go by, you know, rules and laws of that nature, but they wouldn't have to be under a certain, you know, to have certain things. So some things are common anyway. You need to have a smoke detector. You need to have an exit, you know, those kind of things. But this would be a house that an individual, you know, may own that would maybe, you know, be rent it out. And then, you know, the people would be in place, you know, to keep that moving, keep that person moving. Where, you know, when they come out of the facility, come out of the jails, you know, that maybe, as I said, they can't get to the family member until a certain hour or a certain time, you know. And so they would stay there while they worked on, you know, bridging the gap as far as benefits, you know, those kind of things, and give those resources to even to the families. So, yeah, I think what you're saying is exactly kind of what I'm thinking about. And I guess I've been thinking this too long, because as soon as I heard the first word about the transitional, I knew if you put that word in there, then, you know, there's some other things to go with it. But if you used it from a different standpoint, but then still, you know, be able to have those benefits, because most people, even with mental illness, you know, they go to jail. And, of course, when they come out, they may have benefits already. Just, it may have just stopped because there was nobody to keep it going. You know, maybe they had a they go back and look at it again and see if you're still eligible for the benefits. And so that may be all they need. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, if like I said, you know, that's just my own thoughts because of the way that I had to work during that time. And it was always, you know, because I remember one gentleman, he got out of jail, he had an assault charge, so he couldn't go back home, but he had nowhere to go, had no family members. And so what I did, I got with the hotel, one of the hotels here, and I asked them if they would allow him to stay there long enough for, you know, for that time that he's supposed to be away from his home. And I was, you know, my program paid for him staying there, but I didn't have the money, you know, right then. And so the hotel owner said he would work with me. And so the guy stayed there until, you know, he could go back home. And so, you know, that way he wasn't out on the street, and it was cold. So I just thought, you know, that would be something that was, to me, would have been really, really good to have back then. So that's my thoughts.
Emma, this is Ginger. I love that idea, and I wonder if we talk about it, the need being established transitional / respite services, and that's kind of a respite, what you're talking about. It's the respite to kind of focus on care, and maybe if we could look at a way to either reword this need or to look at data in a little bit differently that supports the need, Avis, that might be, and Kirby, that might be a kind of a way to take a little bit of what Emma's saying and rolling it forward. I know I hear a lot about people coming out of jail and it's being so hard for them.
Yeah. Can you all hear? This is Candace. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I can't tell if I'm muted or unmuted. It continually amazes me that law enforcement drops people off at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So I'd almost like to go back to that as well and see what, you know, but we've done the same thing. We've talked and talked and talked about this because, you know, you expect someone to just pick up from, you know, my whole thing is there ought to be someone that meets that person at the jail if they're in need of behavioral health circumstances and to be able to at least connect them to something, because what do you expect if you drop somebody off at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning? But it sounds like that's just a practice that's across the state, correct?
I think it happens in Northeast Tennessee, Ginger.
I'm not That's sure not here what they're doing. I just know that the need to have somewhere is here,
yeah.
Especially when
yeah.
I heard about the gentleman, you know, freezing to death.
Oh.
Well, I think, was there any more input? I don't want to, this is Ginger, don't want to leave anybody's thought process out of this, because this need assessment is a big deal as we push ideas forward to Commissioner Williams and other members of the department's team.
This is Lori again. I'm not sure who said it, but I really like the idea of having mental health go into the prisons or the jails before people are discharged. I don't mm-hmm. know if there's any kind of connection that exists that like that, but I think that would be really good, because even people that may have somewhere to go, if their mental health needs or substance use needs aren't addressed, they end up in not a good place. So I like that idea.
Well, this is Candace again. You know, we have criminal justice liaisons in most of the counties now across the state that, you know, do the release planning and set it up. However, sometimes we don't have the funding for the case managers. We used to have them, but because of funding had to let that piece of the kind of the puzzle go. But the case managers would indeed work with the individuals, because you can set up any kind of plan, but obviously you've got to have somebody connect and meet that person and, you know, get them connected to some kind of services. On the outside, kind of navigate that plan. So I do like the thing about having somebody to go. The transitional housing, of course, is huge. It has continued to be huge.
Yeah.
But to add that respite piece to it would be really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is Ginger. So I think y'all kind of thrown a gauntlet down for us. Candace, maybe you and I can get together and kind of see how we might want to reword this and then shoot it back to the committee for okay. some financing. I'm never one that thinks I'll get it right the first time and appreciate the input people have to kind of fix things once you kind of get those ideas out there. So just for the mental health needs then, what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we kind of want to keep the transitional and respite housing, since maybe we didn't get to make as much progress on that, in part due to COVID even, and that we'll want to really emphasize that respite or safe harbor for folks in that need. And then for the workforce development, again, I don't want to overstate what I'm hearing, but I'm kind of hearing that we think figuring out ways to recruit and train good people in our state is still a need, but we also want to figure out how we can support the individuals that we serve in developing that particular workforce as well. Does that sound, am I on track here and we can work to finesse that goal as well.
Sounds good.
Okay. And then moving down to substance use disorders, we had the two goals. Again, one was to increase recovery housing, to include peer run recovery residents, halfway house, three quarter housing options to support adherence and recovery skills, and increase the education regarding recovery housing for treatment professionals, community members, and recipients. I really think the community is part of that, because there's still a lot of stigma out there for that. And the other substance abuse need that we identified was to increase educational opportunities for clinicians, health councils, educators, community, faith-based organizations, and business partners surrounding the prevalence, impact, and resources regarding harm reduction, recovery, and reducing the stigma. And I think y'all tell me if I'm off. Yeah, no, that a lot of that is related to MAT and some of the prejudices that we found people bumping up against with MAT. So I'll kind of close my mouth and open the airways for you guys to have some feedback on those goals. And, you know, if we want to revise those, go in a whole nother direction. Do we feel like we've conquered those, or do we need to refine them or revise them?
This is Dan with Region 2. I work out in the rural areas, and that is still a huge need. We do not have much in the way of recovery housing out in rural counties. They usually have to go to Knoxville. And even that is not enough. It's not enough recovery housing in Knoxville to serve the needs of the folks in the rural areas.
Thank you, Jan. Are you running into some of the stigma related to the development of recovery housing, or is it just, I mean, I'll just say it flat out, housing, any kind of housing is hard to find nowadays, but does the stigma of it kind of contribute to that?
Yes.
I know the, this is Ginger again. I know the CHI2 regional housing facilitators to focus on substance use recovery housing. I think they started and then COVID hit like 2 days later. So I'll be anxious for them to have the opportunities to really get out and build those community relationships and maybe advance housing opportunities. But COVID is really, I think, has really slowed those opportunities down.
Ginger, this is Avis, and I just wanted to just throw out a couple of things on these needs and just to update the group. One thing I want to share that I'm glad you mentioned is about the CHI2 recovery grant. We did get that additional grant to add the recovery housing, and hopefully that will help a great deal. But also, Naru and I had a conversation about how they can help more on that end from the Office of Housing, and one thing that came up was that we invite the housing facilitators, both for the CHI recovery and just the other CHI as well, to all of the regional council meetings. So what we have done was we have gotten that information and shared it with the information from NARU, the contact information for those facilitators, and shared that with our regional council chairs and vice chairs to include them on the email group so they can come to the meetings and hear in each region what the challenges are and keep everyone up to date in that region as to what is going on and what's coming down the pike. And so that is something to look forward to per region. Jan, I know you're in region two, so perhaps going forward in the region two meetings, you all will get, you know, have participation from the housing facilitators to hear and possibly help if they can on those efforts. So I wanted to make the group aware of that if you didn't know. And also just know that with the Oxford House model as well, of the fiscal year, those number of Oxford houses have increased as well. So I just wanted to kind of update the group and let them know that those are additional things that the department has done in an effort to assist with those efforts. I know it probably will, you know, not be ever be enough, but just wanted to let you know that it's more than what we had going for the last fiscal year.
Thank you, Avis.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Avis. That's good news to hear that it was still growing despite the limitations that we've had this past year. That's awesome. Any feedback then from the group about what we might need to do to revise or change our last year's goals? Do we need to throw either of those two out and start over? Kind of where are people thinking we are?
Hey, this is Sam Slagle. I think we absolutely have to keep the recovery housing on there, on our corner of the state for sure. It's a huge prevalent issue. And I'd go so far to say that the stigma, especially with MAT, is very much on the table. We've made very little dent in that.
Thank you, Sam. Anyone else? Okay. I think what we can do, Candace, maybe you and I can just kind of look over these a little bit more. Maybe touch base with Avis and Nehru. And get a little support and ideas to kind of at least help support our data there. And again, maybe with that, some other ideas might pop up, and then we could send it back to the council or to the committee to say, hey, this kind of came up in our research for the data. What do y'all think about this coming from the group? If everybody would be okay. Candace, I appreciate your help in advance because
you're welcome.
I love the process of this and the fact that our needs assessment goes to the larger group, and from that the department builds its is it a 3-year plan now, Kirby, or a 5-year plan?
It's a 3-year plan.
Yeah. I think it's amazing, you know, it's kind of power to the people here, and that's really considered in the budget and how things get developed and move forward. So we do want to take this very, very seriously. Okay, so I guess we'll kind of let Candace and I carry that forward then, and I think we have just a few minutes. left, and we had some. Unless, let me invite Kirby or Avis. Is there anything else I need to cover right here that maybe I've overlooked?
No, I don't believe so. I would encourage you all to look at the FY21 three-year plan. It's on the department website. If you need to, help accessing it, just send me an email and I'll send you the link to it. Because I've listed everywhere in the plan that the 2020 needs assessment was used. So obviously not every need identified across the state will be incorporated into the plan. And sometimes, you know, the department staff will look at certain needs and maybe only be able to address part of that need in some of their programs, but I've identified them throughout the plan. So I do encourage you to look at it to see if any of your needs have been put in the plan. Other regional councils and statewide committees, their needs as well. And also this year, typically the needs assessment is due on April 1st. And this year it's going to be due on April 15th. I know you all meet again the day before that, so it might be good to even use that time to, you know, discuss the final needs and what you've prepared. Whatever works best for you all.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say, in addition to what Kirby said as well, take a look as well at, this was presented at the last, one of our statewide meetings. I think it was the last one in December where Ellen Omohundro gave you some information and feedback with the needs assessment data report that's also on our website as well. So while you're taking a look at that three-year plan, look at the data report too to see maybe that will help also with any needs that you all have addressed last year to see the data on that and where we are as a department on those specific needs. So look at that again too prior to wrapping up your needs assessment.
Okay, I think we've been given the job, guys, to go to the department's website and do a little research. And I know I use that data book a lot for other things, that when I have to write reports and stuff and need some numbers, that data book is incredible. So, and I think maybe Kirby and Candace, what we might could do is kind of make a goal of fluffing this out and getting it back to people, and then asking for people to give us feedback even before that April meet, so we'll be a little closer to the final product to be submitted then to the council at large. So we'll y'all expect some feedback from the email, and we'll need some feedback from you all as we send that back. So. We'll get on that. We'll be good at it. We'll get it to you. So, any other comments that we needed to raise about the needs assessment at the moment? Okay. I think we had left a few minutes on the agenda just to kind of talk about just COVID in general and how people are managing and coping and getting along. I'll kind of share some personal experiences and just, it was a tough year. I'm 60, I'll be 61 in a couple months, and it was the first Christmas that I didn't get to spend with my mom, who turned 80 this year. So it was kind of an emotional kind of day. But we did Zoom, which was fun, but awkward. Fun but awkward. And so I'm really looking forward to
to things get normal. I've had my first vaccine, and it was not a problem at all. I wasn't even sore or anything. I've gotten a few emails from some of my colleagues that got their second vaccine on Monday, and they were struggling a bit yesterday with some shakes and soreness and headaches. So I'm not looking forward to my second vaccine. I'm getting it next Monday. So if y'all think about me in your thoughts, I'd appreciate it in advance. So I'll open it up and let other people share.
This is Candace as well. You know, I also had the first vaccine and did not have any kind of side effects from it at all, but I have heard about the second round. But I was just actually wondering, too, you know, as far as the rollout for the essential workers, which I was glad to see behavioral health included in that and the steps that have been taken through the endeavors, first, I think, identified by the state and then the rollout. And I know it's just different in every county how it's rolled out, but just, you know, just wondered how it's going along because every, you know, all of our employees that were able, that wanted to receive the vaccine were able to do that the first round. I think I had it a week ago. So just kind of wondering how, you know, how it went across the state.
Any shares out there?
I'm curious, Ginger, you said you got the second vaccination. You're getting the second vaccination?
Yeah, I'm scheduled to get it next Monday.
How were you notified?
When I went and got it, they gave me, you remember when your kids went to school and you had to have your vaccine card?
Mm-hmm.
They actually gave me a vaccine card and they put the date that I was given it on. I got mine on the 29th of December and they put the appointment on the back side of the card.
So they had already set up the appointment for you?
Yeah, it's like a time range, and you go between, mine's between 7 and 11 next Monday.
So this is Sam. Go ahead, Ginger.
Go ahead.
Well, this is Sam Slagle, and I'm on the same end of town as Ginger. And as far as the process, you know, originally I think our coroner had received the vaccines. They had rolled out, here's the plan, do A, B, and C, and then we really don't know exactly when. And then a few weeks later, they completely had changed the whole plan, which was fine and made a better plan. It was a very work. I don't know anybody that waited more than an hour or two. Most people are in and out. It was a great process. Same thing they gave me. I actually got they were scheduling every 10 minutes where I'm going to get my second one, which will be this Friday. And, so my appointment's at 11:10, and I'll be straight in and straight out, no problem. You got to wait 15 minutes afterwards. But something else, I work, part of my role in our facility is with the mental health housing crew, the adults, and we have been able to get the majority of those folks, should they want it, their vaccination. They fall under that long-term care category, so they were able to get their vaccinations, which has been great because a lot of people are really worried about that because they're all living together, and we've done a great job keeping them safe, and our houses have pretty much remained COVID free, but they were able to get that. So I would advocate if anybody has any of that going on, those folks can get their vaccination as well.
Awesome.
This is Lori. I have a question about getting on the call list, I guess it is. If anybody, well, there's probably nobody else from Weakley County, but I called the Weakley County Health Department, and they gave me another number for the regional health office in Jackson, which I've tried to call several times at different times of the day, and it's always busy. And so is there any other way that you can actually get on the list if you have, like, a pre-existing condition?
This is Jan. I believe so. Ellen Wilbur sent out a flyer a while back. Well, was it Monday? About how to access the map, and you click on your county and sign up that way, do online.
Is that on the Department of Health?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi, Ginger. Any other comments or shares? Well, again, I want to thank everybody for taking time out of your busy day to participate. It's an important meeting, and I appreciate everybody being part of it. I'm encouraging you to continue to wash your hands, keep your distance, and wear your mask, regardless if you have the vaccine or not. We've got a lot of Tennessee citizens that we want to keep safe, and we certainly want to keep you all safe because of the important work that you do. Thank you for all of that. Even if you're retired, Ms. Emma, we appreciate what all you do and have done for us. We will, you all look for some emails from Candace and I, and we'll get those to you. Not this week. It won't be this week, Candace. but we'll get that to you. And again, appreciate you all. Stay safe, stay warm. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you. Bye.
Bye bye.
Thank you.